For November 1st, 2013, we talk about The Walking Dead Season 2 announcement, Sir, You Are Being Hunted, and we ask you about spooky games. Welcome to the 40th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. It is our 40th level, fellas, if you do not count the bonus levels.
Woohoo!
So that means that if this were a birthday, people would be bringing us tacky, like black decorations and over the hill and reminding us of our impending mortality. All of those good things.
We'd be shopping for convertibles.
Well, we already do retro gaming.
I suppose. What? What? but yeah, no. So just consider that. Yeah. So it is also roughly our Halloween episode, something like that. And I want to share an anecdote before we get into the main body of the episode.
Woo! So, Did I do it right?
Now I need an antidote for that spookiness.
Yeah.
It's the day after Halloween when you're listening to this. So if you're a true listener and you download it the first day, so there will be some residual spookiness. So at our office we have somebody who brings in her dog. It's like a little terrier kind of dog. It's well behaved, so it's not that huge of a deal. But in the spirit of the season, she had it dressed up in this little T-shirt that had like a jack-o'-lantern face on the back of it, right? Like a little doggy T-shirt dressed up like a pumpkin, right? You know, so you know, I took a picture of it and I shared it on my social networks, saying, "Hey, you know, this dog is too spooky to be in my office," and I'll put these things in the show notes. You know, it's like a little picture of this dog, and then a couple hours later, I get a tweet from Purina. At Purina, it says at Cole Ross, looks like somebody is ready for hashtag Halloween ! We hope your wet nose coworker gets lots of treats this year. And then I'll put this in here so you can take a look at it. They took my photograph that I took and shared publicly on the internet, so I can't really be outraged. And they put like they made it into an image macro that just said that says no tricks, just treats from Purina. No, it's kind of from me. Like I wanted to talk to my friends about a spooky dog, to my audience about a spooky dog, and you got somebody on Tootsuite or Hootsuite rather that is searching for dog plus spooky and making image macros. What happens? Are you guys seeing this?
Yeah, that's kind of shitty. And I would like to point out that Purina is not a P&G brand. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh man, is it one of those like SC Johnson family company ones, or
it's Nestle, which is kind of scary.
They're feeding dogs, your dogs chocolate.
Yeah, it's the same.
Okay. Everyone jumped on that one.
I think I could have that completely wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I. You know. It's
Google
whatever.
Says.
Like there are only like five companies in the whole world, and they own everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say, have an incredibly spooky. Or I hope you had an incredibly spooky Halloween, free of your cute photos being appropriated by multinational corporations.
See, no. It's just a next level scare going on. Like that's the real spooky part of this Halloween story.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just on some next level junk. It is Nestle, by the way.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so. they make their food out of the same stuff that's in a Crunch bar. And I love Crunch bars.
I'm just saying Himes would never do that. So.
Okay. Are you okay being outed that you work for P&G?
I think we've mentioned on a previous.
Okay. Okay. As long as you're fine, I don't want to get you in trouble. But yeah,
no, I'm not shy about
it. Yeah, and we're slamming a competitor too. So, you know, screw you guys. Although yes. if anybody did, I haven't seen my follower report. So they got me a bunch of followers. Hey, welcome everybody. This is a podcast for people who love pets.
The intersection of dog and video game lovers was so broad.
Game dogs. Well, you know, I guess we are friends with video games. Hot dog.
Oh, there
we go.
Clearly. We should have known.
There we go. Yep. See
that new ghost game has a dog, right?
I guess that ghost game. It's a game. It's a game for and about ghosts. Oh man,
for ghosts by ghosts.
So spooky. All right. Yeah. So what have we got in store for you? Just the huge, you know, the news. We got the huge, the news, the grind, a multiplayer, kind of a split kind of thing. Yeah. So why don't we jump right to it? So yeah, I may have said grind there mistakenly, but I actually mean the brief. It's time for the brief where we talk about game news. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer? Because otherwise I've got a doozy.
I think I know the one you have.
Yeah.
So I have another one.
Okay. So I'll do mine real quick. The Walking Dead Season 2 has been announced.
Yep.
It's coming out a little bit later this year. It was rated by the ESRB and listed by retailers. Actually, not just later this year, sometime next month. So in November. Do I want to reveal the spoiler bit about who plays it or about who the main character is?
I'm deferring
to the council. Okay, so yeah, okay, screw that. If you don't want to hear this, the main character, at least in part, is Clem.
Yay!
Yeah. So yeah, that will be pretty cool. I'm incredibly excited about it.
What? Grumble, grumble.
Why grumble, grumble?
I remember. Well, I think it was the end of the spoiler cast. We talked about whether or not it would be a good idea to continue with Clem's story or not.
Yeah, and I don't have any recollection.
Oh.
No, I remember that.
I was of the opinion that they should let that story be and that any...
Oh, yeah. Any tinkering. Just, like, take it and don't make it a franchise kind of thing. Like, just, like, make this make season one a standalone story, season two a standalone story. Yeah.
Oh, well.
I'm not going to turn my nose up at it. I'm kind of excited to see how they work in the 400 days stuff. But
yeah. I guess when we get to the grind, we'll talk about my reason for being worried about things like this.
Okay,
that's cool. A spooky foreshadowing.
but it is available for pre-order on Steam. It's like 10% off, so $22.50. I have no hesitation about saying, like, hey, you should pre-order it. I pre-ordered it in my ill-advised trip through their Halloween sale to buy all the spooky games possible. Yep,
so have you now filled out your Grindhouse list?
Grindhouse?
What's
Hex Crank?
Hex Crank.
Yeah.
Crank, grind, yes. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, as to still, it is going to be an ongoing thing. However, I've added about 25 games to the list. So
you do realize you've now reached critical mass where you know, you've got your list of the games you're going to be doing for Watch Out for Fireballs, the list of games you're going to be doing for Hex Crank. You realize you've reached critical mass where your backlog is multiplying.
Yeah. It's not going exponential. If I didn't have lists, I would fall apart, David. You know this. It is like literally like a bunch of things listed line after line is really all that is holding me together. So,
but Cole, how many lists is enough?
Never enough. Sometimes you wake up and you think, okay, I'm just going to need lists on the bad days, but pretty soon every day is a bad day without a list, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited. All right. I don't know. It sounds like Ben, you're a little bit hesitant.
Yes.
Yes. I want everybody to like to say whether or not they're going to love this right now.
I think I've learned my lesson. I'll be buying it when it comes out. Because if this week has showed me anything, and again, spooky foreshadowing, but I take way too long to play shit that I should play right away. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd say just on the theory of it, I kind of agree with Ben. In terms of, you know, let a story lie, although I'm interested to see whether they can make another game that was as amazing as the first.
Yeah. I'm a little bit concerned because Jake Rodkin and Sean Vanneman, I think, the Idle Thumbs guys, they departed to form their own studio. And so I think that this season is at the very least going to have a different set of lead writers. But you know, in general, I trust Telltale done good. Who wants to go next? Ben, why don't you go, because you had one anticipating mine.
Yeah, mine's a short one. It's just I'll drop it in the link. or drop it in the notes, but it's that Grand Theft Auto sold 29 million copies.
Wow.
It is the 29th of October, so I figured that was appropriate.
It is a little bit appropriate.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
No, that's spooky.
did they list a gross? I mean, did they actually say how many dollars that amounted to? Because
I'll get my calculator up.
Yeah. Assuming that it maintains the same price in all territories, etc. But yeah, they were very clear, at least in the first day, about talking about how it made just under $1 billion.
Yeah, it made $1 billion in 3 days.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big game. It's a good game. I like the game a lot.
We'll probably talk more about it later. Spooky foreshadowing.
Man, this episode is too spooky, you guys.
we need to establish a safe word.
for when it gets too spooky?
Yeah.
I mean, like, too spooky. It's already too spooky. Yeah.
What was the string of expletives I had for the Oculus Rift safe word?
Don't make me go back and find. I'm not even going to joke because I'm not going to go back and find it. If some saint wants to point out the time code, I will. I'm not even going to joke about that. I'm probably not even going to do that. So,
no, we can leave that one dead.
Yeah, but let's see here, Dennis. How about you? News story.
Yeah, I tweeted about this earlier in the week. Wow. I tweeted the link to this earlier in the week, which is that the developers of Dying Light, Techland, are investing a lot of effort in trying to address motion sickness in their kind of first-person running zombie avoidance Mirror's Edge style game.
Where you play as Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, but just I thought it was really cool to see them acknowledging that, hey, motion sickness is actually an actual thing, mm-hmm. a relevant problem for a sizable portion of people, and they're really investing effort and research and just like real thought into trying to eliminate that problem, which was really cool. And I don't know that other studios have been like, we're going to try to mess with people that have motion sickness, but I just don't think there's been that level of intentionality behind the development of games. Yeah. So it was just kind of really cool to see that developers are becoming more sensitive to people with those kinds of conditions.
Yeah.
And I think I would like to think that it's a reflection of the gaming community as a whole becoming more sensitive to those conditions. So, I think a couple of weeks ago I had the arachnophobia thing, now this, and it's just good to see positive momentum.
Is this, am I thinking of the right thing? Is this the same developer that made Dead Island?
Yes.
Because the funny thing about that is Dead Island is horrible for motion sickness.
Maybe they learned their lesson.
I mean, to the point where, like, I'm not someone who gets motion sick from games, and it made, particularly the second one, made me, gave me, like, tension headaches.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, so
apparently they're learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get motion sick real bad. Like, I think the most, recently, the most motion sick that I've gotten... I've talked about other things, but like the most was like Portal 2, where I was like, I played it for so many hours in a row and I eventually had to like lay down and like hold on to my mattress, in order to not like float away. But,
just like the sudden like perspective switches.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like I'd like to see some of their findings, because motion sickness is what happens when when what you see doesn't match up with what your body feels.
Your brain thinks you've been poisoned.
Something like that, yeah. And so it wants to evacuate and, get you to ground. And so I'd be curious how they're going to counteract it. I know most first-person games give you the option to turn off like head bob and things like that. And a lot of thought goes into what the field of view is, like the, you know, like the actual angle that you can see, how much information is there, because a really wide field of view makes it like a fisheye lens and it makes you more prone to this. So like, I know with Portal, they really restricted the field of view, or opened it up. I may have that backwards. I don't know. But they did something with the field of view in order to make it, you know, more palatable to somebody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it, like, to a degree, it seems unavoidable, especially if somebody has really, really bad problems with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I like you said, I think that'd be interesting. I know, like in martial arts and dance and stuff, you know, there's things you can learn for actual motion sickness from moving in order to, you know, counteract it. But I don't know. I know that that'd be interesting to see. I would imagine it'd be even more, more pressing now that the Oculus Rift is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, I feel like if you're playing an Oculus Rift, you definitely sought it out.
Yeah.
You should know that's kind of a risk. No, they said, so there's several things. One, the amount of head bob, which like you said, you know, there are games before that have been able to turn that on and off. They also said that adding a dot to the center of the camera or center of the screen, even if you don't have any sort of aiming reticle, some sort of central focus point helps a lot with that.
Yeah.
See, that's... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
That's funny, because when I said there's things you can learn in, like, martial arts and dance, that's actually what I meant.
Yeah, yeah.
What you learn is spotting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and that's what they teach you to do, like, if you get real motion sickness, real motion sick in boats and cars and stuff.
Oh, really?
Is focus on a spot, and don't deviate.
It's funny you mentioned ballet, because the article says that Techland actually consulted with ballerinas.
When I took ballet, I actually have done that.
Many pro football players have as well, so you're in good company.
Yes, but they get paid much better than I do. but no, that is something they explicitly taught, is we'd do drills where you'd basically like spin around and like focus on the wall, and so it was weird. But
the other thing was, they said there isn't like conclusive, this is what does it, but kind of having fake body parts moving across the screen also serves to mess with how your brain perceives things.
Yeah, yeah.
That's bad.
That's something that was really upsetting about Mirror's Edge 2. For as much as like I dug the immersion, not Mirror's Edge 2, Mirror's Edge as well.
Other betas?
What?
I was going to say, have you been into some other betas?
No, I have not. But, you know, like I dug that you were a body moving in space and not just a ghost that didn't have any feet.
Gordon Freeman.
Yeah, pretty much. I was happy with that. However, it was real bizarre to see legs and arms flailing, just because, again, my arms weren't doing anything. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so cool to see. Again, I'm a big believer in positive momentum, and I think, you know, we should see, when we see these things, we should call them out. We should, you know, reward them through word of mouth, and hopefully we will see them more and more frequently.
Yeah. Now we just have to do something about all these murder victims who are playing games getting real upset at the violence.
That is a little bit above my pay grade, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Also murder victims. spooky, all these ghosts. Yeah. And David, how about you?
Real quick one. Apparently there's for the PS3 version of Assassin's Creed 4, there's going to be some exclusive content that's going to be available to it for 6 months. Initially for 6 months before the other versions got it. However, today Ubisoft came out and basically said they don't have any plans to bring it to any of the other systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that is interesting. Seems like, you know, potentially maybe upping the arms race and the whole, like, you know, exclusivity, you know, by our system, by all our play sets and okay. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Did they say like, hey, they specifically said it's going to be 6 months exclusive and then it will come to other stuff? Or did they say like, hey, it'll maybe come to other stuff later?
What it was is initially it said, I believe it was like on a PS3 ad, said with exclusive content only available on the PS3. And that had, the asterisk it said for 6 months. And then Ubisoft Now came out and they didn't say they weren't bringing it to the others. They said they have no current plans to bring it to the others.
Yeah, that really means anything though.
I'm still slightly irate about the whole Resident Evil 4 thing, obviously. That's
Is that worth being angry about, David?
No, that's a whole other issue. I just find it very, I'm not actually upset at all. I just find it hilarious that the guy, the developer or whoever was so outspoken. He's like, if this ever comes to another system, the fans can come and kill me and take my head as a trophy or something.
You know.
Like, I just find that hilarious.
You're talking about Resident Evil 4, how he said that they could cut his head off with a chainsaw?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not actually upset at all. I just find that really, really funny.
It's like, well, come on, man. Like, give it up.
Ooh, let's go.
Yep, let's do this. Let's do this.
I got the bag, dude. I'll put it on my head.
Yeah.
I also find it funny because one of Sony's head honchos at a big conference actually gave an entire keynote on how console exclusivity is bad. And so it strikes me, I wonder almost if it's one of those things where Sony, like, shut out and was like, hey, we'll pay for extra content on our system. And then Ubisoft went and tried to like sell the extra content to Microsoft or something like that. And Microsoft didn't want to ante up. So it's kind of Ubisoft's decision to be exclusive versus Sony, because that would be very out of character with kind of the message track that has come from Sony on console exclusivity. So,
yeah. It's hard to say that, like, oh, it's money, right? Like, it's hard to say that just because, as far as I know, at least Activision for Call of Duty still has timed exclusives on the 360 on Microsoft on Microsoft consoles. That may be really dated information, but if you want to talk about like, oh, they don't need money, they don't have money, it's not surprising that somebody from Sony came out and said that, just because like these are far from homogeneous companies, right? But I mean, I agree with them. I mean, like, it only helps to have more people be able to play your thing,
right?
Then again, Ubisoft is the same company that didn't bring Splinter Cell Conviction to any system besides the 360, Cole said to a very bitter Dennis.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, so who knows.
I do wonder, the one thing I did kind of wonder, though, is apparently this extra content features the assassin from the PS Vita exclusive game.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if maybe that might at all play into it.
Yeah. I don't know. That's probably a possibility. Although, who cares about what character is in an Assassin's Creed game? If it's not Ezio, I don't care. So... I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. I canceled my pre-order for my PlayStation 4.
Oh, you went through with it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's sad. They're not finishing strong.
No, none of them are. It's kind of like, yeah, you know what? I'm just gonna save my money, buy some extra Christmas presents or whatever for people, and be like, yeah, that's just not
something. I wonder if that'll cause problems, because I'm sure they've, both sides have like upped production because pre-orders have just been huge, and as people kind of, I'm sure a lot of people made pre-orders assuming, oh, I'll just cancel it if I don't like what I see, and we're not liking what we see.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that could cause supply problems or inventory problems, rather, for Sony and Microsoft.
Well, like, knowing what I know about GameStop, and that's where most people are going to pre-order their shit, like, they're not going to let you cancel it. Like, they're going to do whatever they can, like, to make it so that you can't do that. So I can't imagine that happening at scale, but anybody who saw fit to pre-order through Amazon you know, all I had to do was go into my account and then hit my orders and hit cancel. I was like, okay, cool. Do you have a reason? Didn't want it. Okay, cool. Yeah. So that's just a little bit of an update. Hey, why don't we talk about games we've been playing?
The grind.
Now it's time for the grind. Actually, the grind, not that false start that I had. that weird action. Dennis, you expressed interest in going first.
Yeah. So first off, this is going to be, like I said, I feel like I've been playing the Gaming Olympics. I've also been playing Cole and other notable people played it way long ago, and I'm finally getting around to it. Mm-hmm. So let the record show that we talked about Hotline Miami in episode 7. And I'm finally getting around to playing it. And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's dark and it's as brutal as a 8-bit style game can be. But the violence in it was not as over the top as I kind of had in my head going in, which, you know, it was definitely high. I think it was kind of a scenario of, you know, like imagining something is always scarier than actually being shown it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's still super violent. It's super dark. But I think, you know, at least to the point I am in the game so far, it's worth it, and it's intentional, which is really kind of the key thing that I would ask of any game that has violence, is that, you know, it's there for a reason. In terms of the mechanics of the game, it is so much fun. And Colt, did you play it on computer?
Yeah.
Was there a lock-on when you played it on the computer?
No.
Okay, so that is the big concession, the big weakness of playing it on consoles, is that, you know, you move around with the left stick, or what I imagine is WSAD, and then you look with the mouse or the right stick, which with the right stick, it's infinitely clumsier in terms of actually being able to aim the direction as you want.
You're not actually like picking out a pixel that you want to hit. You're actually just picking a direction.
Right. It is not a twin stick shooter. And so what you need to do is learn how to kind of click the right stick, and it'll lock on to the closest enemy. And then you can, you know, you'll automatically point towards them. But in situations, especially where things get chaotic and you have multiple enemies coming towards you, it's very difficult to lock on to the person that you want. Mm-hmm. And that kind of ended a lot of runs for me. So that's the complaint I have, that I'll get that out of the way, is that is a clumsy handling of it on consoles. I don't know how they could have done it any better. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a concession to not having a mouse and keyboard. You're welcome, David, that they had to make.
Yeah.
Yep. That said, it is the most addictive thing that I have played in a long time.
Yeah.
Like just the loop of enter room, assess situation, and then in a crazy, twitchy, you know, quick execution, try to clear the room and repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. And it just works really, really well, aside from that one small thing. And so it's a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of rewards lots of different styles of play, which is always fun. So you can be super, super stealthy, or you can just go in guns blazing, and you can almost make any strategy that you want work.
Yeah, there's just enough randomness to it that it's not rote. It's not like, okay, I have this down now. Like it has a tiny little pinch of entropy to it, so that you're actually like learning how to make these on the fly decisions.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And it's very clear, like some enemies are set to patrol where they would just take every left turn, and some enemies are set to random where they'll kind of stop for a second and then go off in a random direction and stop for a second and go off in a random direction. Mm-hmm. So, some enemies are predictable, some are not, but they're random in a predictable way, if I can even say that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it makes for a ton of fun. And I played through it relatively quickly. So I'm through the main storyline and on to the secondary storyline, if that makes any sense for people who've played the game.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
I said I'm through the main storyline and on to the secondary storyline for people who've played the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And totally lived up to the hype, and is worth checking out, even if it's, you know, is it years now? I was going to say months, but it might be years.
Roughly a year, maybe a little bit less.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing I'm following on the tail of, well, for any questions about Hotline Miami?
No, I'm really happy that you played it. It's it's definitely kind of one of those nice must-play indie games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then, speaking of must-play, I'm shorter in the leg on this one because this was talked about in Bonus Level 10, which was what was that? Shortly after, I don't know.
Like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah. A couple months ago. Yeah. So is Gone Home. And my God, if you are listening to this podcast and you have not played Gone Home, turn this off, go get Gone Home and play it. Like, this is everything that I want video games to be. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just beautiful. And, I find myself more and more talking to people about games as art. Mm-hmm. And just because, you know, I have a lot of friends in the corporate world, or like bosses and managers, and it comes out that, oh, you know, I do this podcast. What's it about? And I have to have a spiel ready for for defending that I, you know, enjoy video games almost. And I talk about how, you know, films started out as a circus sideshow, something to amuse children with. And then people realized that it had all this power for storytelling and art that that was not being realized, and it's developed over the years. I think video games are much the same way.
Mm-hmm. All we need is a white supremacist.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it went, hey, we're doing all right, right? Hey, early evolution is going pretty smoothly.
Yeah, no. It's just too bad that all of the shitty people are in the audience.
Yeah. I was going to say, we just have, you know, sexism and 11-year-olds hurling horrible racist things over their microphones. But, you know, you trade off here and there. But Gone Home is simple enough that anyone can play it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's completely doable at your own pace.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that is... I mean, I certainly felt driven along, and I felt huge urgency to advance later in the game, but that was completely out of the narrative and being engaged with the characters and the story versus any sort of time limits or objectives or anything like this. So you're completely free to explore it at your own pace. And I've seen a lot of discussion of why is Gone Home a video game and not a book, you know? Or a short story. And I think the answer to me is very, very clear. And it's that it removes a layer of abstraction.
Okay.
In a book, you read about someone doing X, Y, and Z. In this video game, you are someone doing X, Y, and Z. And that's a level of engagement that can only be achieved in a video game. And I think in any other context, it could still be good, but I think there would be significant amounts lost. And so I feel like in playing Gone Home, and I'm trying to say as little about the actual plot as possible, because if you've managed to avoid details this far, that's great. That's the way to play it. But I feel like I've gotten a game that I can just very clearly point to and tell anyone, regardless of how much they've played video games or not, hey, go check this out, invest 3 hours in it. It's, you know, it's like a slightly long movie, and you will be so glad you did.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes my argument for me.
I'm kind of curious if we're a little bit too close to it. And, you know, because we play enough games to know why it's remarkable. And I think that it very much is a game because, you know, you are propelling yourself forward and, you know, there's the exploration and the mystery side of it, you know, as opposed to somebody else bringing you through all the beats. You can kind of approach it in this roughly nonlinear way and you get as much out of it as you put into it. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you took this and, you know, sat, you know, just whatever token layperson you want, your grandma, your aunt, you know, somebody at work, if you sat them down to it, I wonder if all of the baggage that they have about what video games are would actually make them less prone to enjoy it because they wouldn't, you know, have the vocabulary to, you know, pick it up and then follow it down to the stuff that's kind of like really interesting, right? Like, would they know to, you know, look under the Christmas duck in order to get the key for the front door? You know, would they like, would they just be baffled that they have to turn on the lights when they walk into a room? It may sound like I'm not giving people enough credit, but like all of those kind of small little things and just the things that we take for granted, them not having that background, I wonder if that would get in the way.
I would almost argue that. I would argue in the opposite direction. I would say that if they had trouble appreciating it, it would be born out of a low expectation for video games. So they wouldn't know, or they get frustrated by not turning on the lights because they assume that no video game could be detailed enough to turn on the lights, or they wouldn't think to look for Christmas duck look under Christmas duck because they don't think of video games as anything other than murder simulators. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why would a cabinet open in a video game unless you're going to have a disembodied head inside it?
So
actually a Christmas duck?
Yeah, it's an item that the key is taped under. Mm-hmm. The key to the front door. I've heard people, I've heard of people trying to introduce this to friends, family, loved ones, whatever, and then they get stuck at Christmas duck, and it's like, oh, that actually is although it is a relatively people tape their keys to weird shit, but it's just gamey people enough that it throws them off. Oh yeah, just kind of like take your spare key and you put it under a rock or something. I'm just wondering if the ideal environment isn't so much like saying to somebody like go check this out on I don't care, I'll buy it for you on Steam, do it in your solitude, or if it's like me standing over their shoulder and like when they get stuck helping them along until they hit that critical path. Or they reach that threshold where it's like, okay, this can resolve itself of its own momentum.
Yeah,
and then they'll be spoiled for the narrative, like, oh, this is cool and personal and small and all of the things that everybody has said about Gone Home since it came out.
Well, as a data point, I mean, isn't that kind of what made to a certain degree Dark Souls click? Is you need, or at least I think both all of us to some degree or another, needed someone to kind of explain some of it, show us the ropes, go up, not down, stuff like that. And then that was what then allowed us to approach it and, kind of gain the momentum. So I imagine it would be a very similar thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, like everybody needed a dark Sherpa. And yeah. Although I know, like my, I guess
that needs
my
to be a shirt.
I guess okay, title. I guess my Sherpa was just a website that said "Go up, not down, dummy," and that was about it. But I guess I don't know how novel what I'm saying is, but just in my talking with people about this game at work, after I beat it, I went and said, hey, if you want an example of how storytelling can be done in this weird and awesome way, go check this out, because at work storytelling is just what we do and it's all we ever talk about when we're not quoting Christmas Vacation. and so that it came up and I hadn't, nobody's reported back, and I'm just wondering if it if it did or didn't land for any of these myriad reasons.
So
would that be, if you did, help them with it, would you then be the duck Sherpa?
The home Sherpa? I don't know. But yeah,
I like duck Sherpa.
Yeah, duck Sherpa. Just look under the duck, man. Where's the duck? Open the cabinet. I can open cabinets? And then they spend just the entire time opening the cabinets. Oh, so here's my question. Did you put stuff back? Did you close drawers? And did you turn the lights off?
Left all the lights on because that's what I do in real life.
Okay, you monster.
Yeah. I initially started putting everything back.
Mm-hmm.
And then got I'll say probably a half hour in and realized this is stupid. I I was doing it out of a habit of wanting to be a good visitor, I guess, and not wanting to wreck someone's house. And I'm like, but I'm getting confused about, where I've been and where I haven't. And I had opened certain drawers a couple of times and I was like, okay, I'll just start leaving everything open. So,
yeah. So just like a half real
hour. Yeah. I went about a half hour. And then what was the final piece? Put stuff back, turn on off lights.
Yeah. Put stuff back, drawers, and then lights. Yeah. So you hit all of them. I was just curious. I mean, that came up on the bonus level about it.
So there's two things I want to say about the game, And then you can tell me if you think they're too spoilery to leave in. The first one I'm pretty confident is not, which is there's an option from the main menu to play with all doors unlocked, and I think that's a horrible idea.
Yeah.
I think the very light and gentle gating that this game does do is essential.
Yeah.
So I think that's – I don't even understand why they included that. Maybe it's in the name of making it accessible, but I think it takes so much away from the storytelling that I'm very sad that that was included.
Yeah.
And I hope no one actually used it until after they'd played through the game.
I've only ever heard of one person using that, and that was the second time name dropping this podcast. But it was Riff from Video Games Hot Dog, who played All Doors Unlocked and like no diary entries.
Like did he do it after he played the game?
No, that was his first playthrough,
dude.
And he liked it. Like, you know, he played it as a mystery game, and you know, he read the stuff afterward and was like, okay, cool, it made sense. It's
I, all lights on, I can understand. Mm-hmm. that's fine
if you're scared of the dark. Yeah
sure. Again, making games accessible, that's great. Mm-hmm. But in terms of locked doors, and I think in terms of the journal entries, having those voice acted as I was seeing the different elements or artifacts they were related to was very powerful, and I think was essential enough to the way the story was being told that it's, you know, this is all considering that it was default, you know, that's the way it was. But I'm very sad they included the option to turn it off, and I don't understand the context in which anyone would want to do that.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. So the second thing, and prepare for a weird jump if you're listening and this is too spoilery, but I thought this was a really interesting point you guys made in the bonus level, that it's almost the edgy decision now to have a hopeful ending.
Right. Well, and I mean, you could argue that it's, yeah.
You could argue that it's not hopeful, or
so anybody who's listening and this is left in, it is ambiguous. It's entirely how you interpret the events up to that point. So
I disagree with, and now this is a whole conversation that's not going to get left in. But I disagree with that, in that it is not fairy tale ending hopeful. And I feel like people have this false idea in their head of what hopeful means. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it has to be, and they lived happily ever after and nothing could go wrong. Or else it's, you know, dark and gritty. And I think that's dumb. That's, you'll never be happy if you view the world that way.
Yeah.
And what this portrays is what real life hopefulness feels like. Mm-hmm. And that's, hey, things are looking up.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, there's some really good things have happened. I'm just going to make sure that's left out, which is, you know,
if we go too much further in this direction, we're actually going to reveal what the turn is. I'm not going to call it a twist, but like when the game becomes what it actually is about.
That's right. And not
like,
I don't want to take it
from anybody.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, let alone, you know, David and Ben, who I assume are still right here.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Anyway. I
was going to say, I'm holding my headphones like 4 feet from me just not to hear anything about this.
Don't worry. I've got the safety net on, Ben. I would have dropped the call.
Sometimes I forget who's played what and who hasn't. Anyway, so I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. I agree that it's so refreshing that the game is, in my opinion, hopeful, and I will have a separate discussion on how we define hopeful and I think it's stupid the way, well, sorry, that's the wrong way to say it. But leave all this out essentially, and I loved Gone Home and you should play it. So
I don't know that there's anything I need to leave out.
I think I said on our Facebook page that I would be talking about it in the vaguest, most non-spoilery terms possible. So hopefully I sound enough like a raving idiot that I haven't ruined anything.
Yeah.
Just bleep out random parts.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. There's nothing.
Go home.
Play it. It's like on sale a lot. Just buy
it. Go home and play Gone Home.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And then I've used up more than my allotment of time, so I'm not going to talk about Sir, You Are Being Hunted now.
Yeah.
And that is because I strongly recommend that we should make it a full-blown bonus level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
okay, should I drop that for mine as well, actually?
Well, actually, if you want to talk about
it. Yeah, yeah. Like, if David can take it, then we can just make it into a discussion. So.
Yeah, I'm sensitive to turning this into the Dennis cast. So,
I'm going to do mine because it is in similar terms to Gone Home. Really the only game that I played aside from a smattering of Grand Theft Auto V was the Stanley Parable.
This is just the night of me holding the headphones.
I'm going to be as sensitive as possible because I don't want to ruin anything. It's an incredibly hard game not to ruin, so it's going to like lead to me not talking about it as much. But I have to say that like Gone Home and like Dear Esther. And just this whole weird subclass of narrative first-person games that, you know, are arguably, I don't know. I'm not even going to get into that discussion. I'm not even going to say, like, oh, some people say they're not games, whatever. But, you know, like those, if Dear Esther and Gone Home go for the gut and the heart, the Stanley Parable kind of goes to the head. It is really awesome commentary, and I have to say that like the gamut of emotions that it runs, you know, from like really just like making me laugh my ass off to really making me like stop and consider and think, really, really great. From a presentation standpoint, it's kind of like all the stuff that I loved best about Portal, which was when it went off the rails, you know. And it's like, oh, we're actually like messing with the structure of this. And the entire thing is messing with the structure without talking about what structure they're messing with. And it also plays with the it plays with the antagonistic relationship between a creator of something and the narrator. The creator of something / the narrator and the person playing it. So this voice actor, you know, the person who plays the voice who narrates everything, really, really good. Awesome performance, amazing writing, like a tremendous amount of like creative energy is apparent in it. What I will say is for anybody who has a computer that can run it, and this was tricky for me, you should download and play the demo, which is not a section from the game. It is actually like entirely created. It's full of original content, and it is perfectly indicative of the kind of thing that you're going to see. And because I don't feel the need to not spoiler a demo, I will say that you spend most of it being introduced to the process of what goes into making a demo. as you are waiting for like the demo to be like ready, you're walking through like the factory and getting the tour, and there's a hall of fame that's like great game demos in the history of games. So like there's Metal Gear Solid 2, there's Kentucky Route Zero, there's Half-Life, and there's like one other one just like at like in these little like picture frames on the wall. Like
nice.
Like that's kind of the level of stuff that's there. So I really recommend it. I think it's coming to Mac here pretty soon. So Dennis, you should be able to play it. I just, you know, booted into Windows on my other laptop. But yeah, it's about 3-4 hours, something like that.
I feel like games are really finding a sweet spot in that like 3-4 hour window. Like that's how long Gone Home took me.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like for games as art, that's actually kind of important because in order for something to be art, you have to be able to have dialogue about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for you to be able to have dialogue, you need to be able to say, hey, watch this. you know, I can't very well, I mean, as much as I love Dark Souls, I can't very well just be like, hey, play Dark Souls.
You know, like, I have no Souls. Problem doing that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're a horrible, horrible person.
Well, yeah. But, I make no pretense.
But you know what I mean. Like, you know, Dark Souls isn't something you can just play and then just, you know, immediately have a conversation about the way I can, you know, just boot up Netflix and watch, you know, like, Pulp Fiction if I wanted to talk to someone about it.
Yeah, like, digestibility and accessibility are, you know, important. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I almost would think of a video game more like a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, hey, there's a more substantial investment there.
And don't worry, it gets good after the first season. So
yeah.
just sink 8 hours into this, and then yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, Stanley Parable. I really recommend it. You know, like if you like those games that I name checked in that description, you're really going to like this.
Good. Okay. That's I said earlier, like I'm learning my lesson not to wait to play these games that people talk about. And so the second this thing is on Mac, I'll download it.
Yeah. It's so weird too, because it's a Source mod. I say this without knowing how difficult it is, but I one can only imagine that Valve makes it, if not like easy, like at least they facilitate, getting your thing to run in Windows if it's made in Source. But I'm going to abdicate myself from that comment because I feel really shitty about it. Like, no, man, you just press the button. Just like go in and press the click the Mac checkbox and hit export, you dummies. Like, yeah. I know it's not that easy, but like it's weird to me because we're seeing this thing where a bunch of games are available on Mac day and date, which is nice. Yeah. Let's see here. David, how about you?
Sure. I've actually been playing two main things. The first one's something that Dennis introduced me to, which was Sir, You're Being Hunted.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has to go down as one of the best titles for a video game ever, I think. But I really love the way he described it to me. He said, this game is like if you're playing Capture the Flag, except you're the only one on your team, and the other team is robots.
Oh, man.
So the actual plot line is you're a British gentleman scientist, and you have some sort of time travel or teleportation or some sort of device, and that accidentally transports you to this group of islands populated by aristocratic robots that decide to fox hunt you.
Yeah.
And your device has exploded and scattered parts all over the island. So you have to go gather all the parts while robots are chasing after you with shotguns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this.
Are the robots on horseback?
Huh?
Are the robots on horseback?
They actually are not. Like, so far, there's robot dogs, robot hunters. There's a hot air balloon with a spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe there's a bog monster.
There's also a town crier type of guy that you find in more populated areas. And I haven't,
right.
I've been so scared of him that I haven't gone anywhere near him. So I don't know what his shtick is other than to be really big and jolly.
Right. And there's also, this is sort of a spoiler, but also scarecrows are not your friend.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah. It's weird. Just so everyone can understand the physicality of what's going on, I'm gripping my desk and holding back because I love this game so much. So, but
yeah,
please continue, David.
Yeah, it's weird. It's sort of it sort of has a bit of a survival horror vibe. Definitely survival.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of actual gameplay, it's probably for the most part a stealth game.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to eat, you have a hunger level that, depletes. So you have to basically find, buildings, and any of the doors you can activate, and you can get bandages, food, very rarely weapons, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at its core, it's a stealth game, but it's much more. It's not Splinter Cell stealth. It's a little bit closer to a Far Cry type of a thing.
Yeah. Well, Splinter Cell is so controlled, the environments that it gives you. So,
right. I guess what I mean more than that is it's not a stealth where you're in control exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You are not presented as necessarily being someone who's good at stealth.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it's much more the most dangerous game. Like, you're a random person, head out to the wilderness and hopefully you survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your vocabulary. Oh, go ahead.
Gone. Yeah, gone.
I was going to say your vocabulary for stealth is roughly equivalent to what it would be in real life. Like yeah. you can hide and cower. that I'm very good at those things. You can run away. That's a key feature. You can throw things, but not really hard enough to injure anyone. So that's another good one. And occasionally, if you're very lucky, you find a weapon, but you're not very good with it. So like it's surprisingly realistic. The other thing that makes the stealth unique is it's the first truly open world stealth game that I've ever found. Mm-hmm. Where your option, if you come upon, you know, generally in stealth games, it's like, hey, there's like three different ways you could approach this. If you're really creative, you'll figure out, you know, all three of the ways that we've kind of set up for you. Whereas this one is like, okay, the thing is in the middle of a field. I could approach it head on, or I could literally go far enough that I'm kind of over the horizon from these guys, sneak around and come at it from the north. Or, you know, I could use this field of boulders to my right to try to approach. But there's a significant amount of this game that's spent just walking, or running and kind of positioning yourself. And the world is open enough that you can literally come at a problem from any angle.
Yeah. It's stalking and being stalked, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The other big thing is you have no map and the game is procedurally generated.
Yes.
In the world.
Yeah.
And some of their blog stuff is worth reading. Basically, as far as I can tell, one of their guys on their team who does their procedural generation apparently really, really likes the British countryside. And so like the entire thing is around creating an accurate depiction of the British countryside, and to the point where like they have different biomes, so like you know, kind of the default is just kind of just general, you know, just general British hamlet, you know, hedges and fields and stuff like that. There's one that's kind of Britain's equivalent of like the Rust Belt, where it's like, you know, old factories and high tension lines. There's one that's the moors. Nice. And I think the other. Say that again.
I just said, oh, nice. That it varies.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, I think the other one is like mountains. But so, you know, but it, you know, does a really good job of. I feel like one, it's very beautiful. It's very well done. But I feel like from an accomplishment standpoint, almost all, I'm sure not all, but almost all of the procedurally generated games I can think of have either been like asymmetric games or like block-based games, you know, like Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like this is really interesting in showing that procedural generation can work with a much more sophisticated world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I played one round of it. I got killed very quickly, like within like 3 minutes, I think. And the thing that stuck out to me was just the horrifying noises that the robots make. And just like for me, having, again, no, not much experience, how difficult it was to determine that they were right on top of me. because of just the seemingly omnipresent clanking and like adorable chattering almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say part of it is if you can hear the robots, you're in trouble. Like just in general, like
is that like if you heard the shot you survived?
Yeah.
Right.
But you can
it's sort of a thing where like not to be like weird about it, but if you always heard that was because for the entirety of the time you played you were in trouble. Most of the time when I'm playing I'm not hearing it because I'm staying as far away from them as I can.
Yeah. And I just didn't know what the safe zone was, so
right. And I will say so far my one complaint in it is they're walking a very fine line because it's, like we said, it's supposed to be a game where you are a regular person. The one problem I have with it is, particularly with the stealth elements, I struggle to play intelligently in terms of, basically, if the robot sees me at all, the game's over.
Right.
Where I feel like, ideally, it kind of implies that it wants you to be able to, you know, run off and hide much more than it seems like you really can. Dennis, I mean, is that something you figured out?
Yeah, I was going to say a large part of the fun is kind of learning the rules of the game. And one of the things is that there are times where you just need to cut your losses and turn and run before they've actually seen you. And it's like, I've gotten close, but oh, they just, I got unlucky and they turned back towards me. I could try to sneak away, but that's just going to lead to them getting closer to me. And so if I try to hold on to the situation too tightly, the game is going to end. And so I just need to turn my back and run away as fast as I can and live to fight another day, which is amazing. Like the intensity that brings, I've never seen anything like it. The other fun thing from learning the rules of the game, I would love to hear, by the way, from you, David, some anecdotes and the most interesting things that have happened to you. For me, one of the most interesting things that happened was, I started the game. It kind of gives you one dead robot to loot to kind of give you your initial equipment. And so I got a pistol with 6 rounds in it. I'm like, okay, cool. And just, kind of snuck up on some robots, didn't realize how good they were going to be at spotting me. So again, not knowing the rules of the game, panic and just fired all 6 rounds at them, which you have no aiming capacity if you're not like zoomed in. So I have no idea to this day if I even hit one of them. Ran away, managed to survive that, kind of saved my game. But then realized, well, crap, I just, I blew my rounds, right? Like I have no weapon now. And died shortly thereafter. And I was like, okay, I know now that I have to treat these bullets much more valuably. I need to be a lot more strategic with this and a lot more cautious. Instead of reloading my game from that save point, I'm going to regenerate the world and I'll just start again. Well, congratulations, I restarted a world, looted that first robot, and there was no pistol on the robot. I was like, well, fuck.
Yeah, I've had some similar things. The one thing, actually, I have to admit, I learned this from there's a forum thread that's basically like survival tips. Random thing, reading the Steam guides for this game, player made Steam guides are highly highly encouraged because they are all like ye old gentleman's guide to surviving the robot menace.
Nice.
Stuff like that. But one of them I found is they have the thing that's kind of new now is or popular now is, if there's like, a flock of birds or something, just kind of hanging out in a city, or whatever, if you go over and walk over to them, they'll just kind of fly away all picturesquely. But if you do that in this game, that's, you then leave that area because the robots are coming.
Yeah.
Because the robots will see the birds suddenly fly away and come to investigate.
Oh, no.
And AI that respects your intelligence. Like, in a Splinter Cell game, you can hide 5 feet away from where you killed someone. And everyone's just like, well, I guess this dead body was an accident. Or what was the Dishonored?
Line. Someone must have been just a rat. Tossed a hand grenade at me. Yeah. Must have been a rat.
Right. Whereas this one, they're actually like, I feel like, again, just in the same way that you are an average Joe protagonist, your antagonists are just as smart as if they were average Joes who happen to be robots hunting you.
Average robots.
They're not going to be stupidly looking in the exact wrong direction when you're approaching. They know to camp out on the things that you need to find.
Yeah.
They will call in friends. They will notice birds flying away. Like, these are smart enemies that you're going up against, and it feels that much more accomplished when you actually succeed against them.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited to spend a little bit more time with it when I have more time to spend with it.
It's so good. Sorry.
It's, oh, man. Neat. You said you had something else, David. What else was
yeah,
there?
Yeah, and it's actually also really good. Have you guys seen Path of Exile at all?
Oh, is that the Diablo-like that's free to play on Steam?
Yeah, that's Diablo 3. I'm now officially Diablo, the actual Diablo 3 never happened. This is basically everything everyone wanted Diablo 3 to be.
Okay.
It's the plot line is basically you play as I believe there's eight classes, I believe. Seven classes, and each of them are some person that has done something horrible and is consequently being exiled to this, there's basically this continent where they send all of their, like, criminals, and it's full of, like, Lovecraftian horrors, so it's basically Australia.
Okay.
Which is actually kind of funny, because I just realized before the podcast that this game is made by a team from New Zealand. So it actually is Australia.
Of course.
And kind of the plot line is this is just this almost Dark Souls-esque, just like cursed land where, like, anyone who dies in this on this continent a couple days later rises as a zombie. You know, all the creatures have become like monsters, stuff like that. And so, you know, the other NPCs are all similar, you know, exiles that have kind of, you know, scraped together these sort of almost post-apocalyptic-esque cities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, really kind of a cool premise. I'm not personally, and this is totally a personal thing, I'm not a huge fan of the whole, like, every character is dark and conflicted and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they are well written. And the I would say probably the two interesting things, though, is all of the skills or all of your skill points you spend are on a passive tree that everyone shares. The only thing that's different is where you start in the tree.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
And there's three stats, strength, dexterity, and strength, dexterity, and intelligence. And basically, there's one for the seven classes, there's one class that specializes the only one, or rather three classes that specialize the only one, three classes that specialize in two of them, and one class that specializes in all three.
Okay.
So it's really it's effectively a free-form class system.
Right.
And then the other interesting thing is everything in the game is loot. So, like, your skills are actually kind of materia-esque, are, you know, gems that you sock into gear. They allow you to, you know, use a spell or whatever. The end game dungeons are maps that drop that can have certain prefixes and suffixes that change what the level is like.
Hmm.
The probably my favorite one is that potions, instead of potions being a consumable, potions are an item that can have different stats and things. And then whenever you kill an enemy, you get one charge in the potion. So, for example, you might get a healing potion that can carry 60 charges, uses 10 charges whenever you use it, and when you use it, you know, creates a localized AoE.
Hmm.
So they really go to the hilt on that. So, yeah, it's pretty spiffy.
Yeah, it's I wish I could get excited about that genre of game. I just can't.
Why is it not on Mac?
See, the thing I'll say, it's only officially on PC. If you go to their the official forums, they have a sticky that has how to run it on. I guess there's a thing called Wine. On Mac. So apparently it works on that. But
running stuff in a wine bottle is actually, it makes it really buggy.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it's pretty unstable. Like you're devoting a great deal of system resources to emulating certain parts of Windows in order to make it run.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds, as far as I can tell, it sounds like they want to board it. Like that's their intent. I will say the only thing I really don't like about it is what makes the game good is that they're trying to make it more less dumbed down than Diablo 3 was. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, like they're kind of, that then means they're all about, oh, this game needs to be hardcore. And one of their things for that is you can't respec.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, considering how complex and sophisticated the system is, I completely understand why they don't like the fact that, like, the idea of people being able to just respec into a completely different build, but at the same time, like, the degree to which, like, you know, is armor health more important? I don't know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Just stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like not being able to respec is always a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a system where basically they have an item called an Orb of Regret that allows you to respec one skill point. However, you get about 10 of them from quests in the game, and then they drop very rarely. So if realistically, let's say you get 20 of them, a max level character will have 120 skills. So, I mean, it's not, you know, technically you can do some changing, but realistically, I don't know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've toyed around with the idea on several occasions of going back and doing Diablo 2. But
it's hard to say. Like, I would say pound for pound, Diablo 2 is one of the best games I've ever played. It's in this weird situation where it shows its age, it shows age not as much as it's actually, I mean, the game's like 15 years old. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's starting to show its age. But on the other hand, there haven't been any other good games to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody has their own opinion about how you do replace that. Like, you know, I tend to, you know, just the discourse around it tends to be, God, I'm invoking discourse, fuck. But just like when Diablo 3 was about to come out, it was like, oh man, Blizzard sucks because XYZ, Torchlight is going to be the thing because XYZ. And it's like, well, I don't know. Like, you can play them both and you can like find things to like, maybe.
Yeah, I think the thing with Diablo 3. It's just it didn't capture what made Diablo 2 fun and meaningful and stuff like that. It just fundamentally missed it. And I feel like that's kind of the thing. I've not played Torchlight. I've heard it's good. I think part of the problem has just been a game like that needs a community, and no game has been able to get enough of a community yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because no game is Diablo. I'm pretty sure Diablo 3 had a lot of community around it, and it continues to have. But people opt not to play it because blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Now I'm just trolling. So.
So, Ben, save us.
Yeah. Ben, yeah, we're going for a very long time here. So I would like to hear what you've been playing, Ben.
Yeah, I don't have anything cool. I don't have any indie games. I have two lame games, I guess.
Okay.
I've continued to play Grand Theft Auto 5. I've dug more into the GTA Online. Parts of it are fun. Their race system's pretty cool. That can be fun.
Yeah.
Parts of it are not fun. So definitely if you're playing with bad sports, it is not a fun experience.
Oh, do like people rage quit or?
No, it's just so a lot of time kind of the norm is just to not trust anybody who's on the server because everybody kind of kills everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so that is a negative or a deterrent for the game, I think. They have a cool mechanic where, like, if you steal cars from people, like NPCs, sometimes you'll get, like, an anonymous text and it'll say, "You're going to regret that," or whatever, and then it'll put a hit out on you.
Yeah.
And so other players can kill you for that money, and that's a cool system, but there's too much of people just killing randomly. So I've tried to take like a Buddhist stance and like not even kill anybody. Yeah. I don't mind trolling people into killing or dying, but I will not directly kill anybody.
I trolled him with my gun. How'd you do that? Yeah. I shot him a bunch of times until he didn't move anymore.
He got lead poisoning.
Yeah.
Hey, nice head. Be ashamed if something happened to it.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Wait, so is this something like could players not, you know, is it players kill everyone just because, you know, bullet spray, or is it players purposely just kill every player they see?
It depends on the player. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people fall into the second camp. I mean, so like there's designated areas, for there's like death matches and stuff, so that works. I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know. It seems like it's not completely coherent yet, just as far as making it a fun experience. So
yeah. So I mean, and that persistence plays into it too, right?
What do you mean?
Oh no, I just mean like just the fact that you can just dip into this guy at any time, right?
Yeah.
That seems real important, just because the idea of quitting to a menu in a Grand Theft Auto game really just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah. They have definitely a smooth system as far as being able to transfer between in and out of the story mode, and just being able to cycle between any of the four characters once you set up the multiplayer is, yeah, I mean, that's really nice.
Been doing more like optional stuff in the, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, so when you go around the map, there's different spots where you can trigger kind of group missions. And so it can either be like a straight up mission where it's like, hey, go here, kill this gang, do something, fly a plane, maybe, who knows? Mm-hmm. So it's just like a mission, you know, your typical GTA mission.
Yeah.
But then you can also do races where you race against people. You can do death matches where you shoot people. Let's see, those are the two mechanics they have. There's parachuting, where you parachute with other people and you're given points based on how accurately you fly through the loops or whatever.
Hey guys, one second. Somebody's ringing my doorbell. I'm going to go get it. BRB.
This seems like a spooky interruption.
I know.
Dennis, I did want to pitch to you. How does one abbreviate, sir, you're being hunted?
Yeah, I've gone with SYABH.
Okay. I was toying around, you know, Sir Yob.
Sir Yob.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. Were you guys talking about Grand Theft Auto, or did you break to?
We jumped back to Sir Yob being hunted.
Okay. Yeah. No.
nothing bad.
Okay. No. So my neighbors across the hall are pretty old. And I never know if they ring the doorbell, if they're going to need help or not. But they just wanted to know if I smelled gas. And I said, nope. So,
yeah. That's still rather ominous.
A little bit. Like,
seems pretty spooky.
A little bit, yeah. So, yeah, let's see here. Do you have any other things to say about Grand Theft Auto V, Ben?
Not really.
Okay.
You've been playing that too, but you didn't mention that.
You know what? Like, not enough to be to have anything more worthwhile to say about it. You know.
Okay.
Like, I still enjoy it. but yeah.
Gotcha.
I'll ask you, Ben. What are some of like the cooler moments you've encountered in the multiplayer?
Usually just like winning at things. So like
winning.
Yeah. No. There was like one of the races they have is really fun. It's like a Grease-esque sort of race where you're in the drainage thing? Drainage canal.
Yeah, like canal, that's in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And so I was racing, and there were four people, and I was in third place. And the fourth place person was so far behind that he started driving in the opposite direction. And so on the last lap, he ran into the first place person, and then the second place person ran into both of them. And so I cruised past them and made it into first place, like at the end of the race. So
nice.
things like that will happen, and that's pretty fun. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just small things like that. But yeah. So, anyway, other game I've been playing this week is I picked up Batman Arkham Origins.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It surprisingly didn't take much. I had talked with one of my coworkers, and he talked it up a lot. And so I got it. However, it seems okay right now. So perhaps I shouldn't make any judgments. I've only played it for a couple hours. But I could see it. I mean, I've already noticed like bugs in the game, I guess, and it definitely doesn't. I don't know. I think anything that I will say will be a mix of prejudices on my part at the moment. So I should probably hold off before delving into that further.
Right. So is this what you were alluding to by saying like that some stuff is just better left alone?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So is it narratively unsatisfying or?
As I said, I don't know. Like right now, I don't know what to think about it yet.
Yeah.
So some of the changes they made have been interesting in a good way. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been interesting in a not so good way. So I don't know. I need to kind of get further into it before I can make some solid comments about it.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, I will definitely have you report back on that.
Multiplayer.
And now it is time for the multiplayer section where we have you participate in our thing and stuff. We've got two things here. The first is kind of like a free play multiplayer, and then Gary came in and hijacked our shit with a thing. So we're going to do Gary's hijack first, and then if we have time, you know, if we... You know, end up. I think we're just going to run out of time, so this is just going to be our multiplayer, and we'll make note to come back to this. But
I think he actually prefers multiplayer consultant.
I guess no, just like hijacking our shit, trying to run it. But yeah,
we're being mind controlled. Spooky.
Yeah, spooky. Yeah. But cool. So yeah, let's jump right into it. His question was, what was the first game that scared you? And I want to hear from one of us first before we jump into it. Because this technically was a question aimed at us because it was free play. So
does anybody have one they want to go? I've got one that was decidedly not a horror game.
Okay.
It was the video game version of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Oh, really?
Yeah. there's a level where you go to Tatooine and you're like negotiating for Anakin. And they, of course, they attach all this side quest stuff to it.
Yeah.
But at one point, they drop you down into a Rancor pit, like, you know, in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And I just was not expecting it, and that was probably the hardest boss you really fight to that point in the game. And it's so aggressive that I kind of freaked out. And then to add insult to injury, the sides of the pit you're in are lined with spikes. So you're kind of, your natural instinct is kind of run away to the edge and then kind of skirt around the edge. But you couldn't do that because it was covered in spikes and you would lose health very rapidly anytime you stepped onto it. And I finished the encounter and just like, I was literally shaking and had my heart beating really hard inside my chest. And just like, it was completely unexpected, although I guess I should have seen it coming because, you know, you were standing in front of a hut trying to negotiate for a hostage and it's like,
yeah, that's what they do.
It's kind of their thing.
They're poor negotiators.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if I went back to the game now, it would be laughably bad. But just for the time and place, it was so unexpected and so scary. And, you know, one of those moments where I kind of lost that detachment that you get from being behind a mouse and keyboard and just fully fall into, oh, shit, if I die, I'm screwed kind of mode.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that, just that tonal shift aspect of it. Huh. Let's see here. Looking at this, this is the listener response. Tim Shoemaker on Facebook says, Silent Hill was the first game I can remember that freaked me out. I would have been around 14 at the time. I don't know what else to say about it other than I could only play it in quick burst sessions, and after everyone, my mother wondered why I kept going... And after everyone, my mother kept wondering why I kept going back if it was so scary. Yeah. So... you know, that's a good first one to hit like that. So I think I played Resident Evil 2 or 1 before that. Silent Hill, the original, was like one that I think I pressured a friend's mom into renting for us when I stayed over at night. And then like we did the, we were out, it's like, hey, let's rent a game, you know, like, you know, for a weekend thing. It's like, oh, Silent Hill. Like I saw this in the back of my, Metal Gear Solid manual. Like I want to try this because it reminds me of this Resident Evil thing. And so, like we played the intro up until when you go down the alley and you know you wake up in the diner is like nope these kids are killing me and we turned it off and had to return it. That didn't have to, but we opted to because it was so spooky. Yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah, let's see here, Ben, what's Carlo say?
Carlo says, I must have been 7 when Resident Evil came out. My aunt owned a PlayStation at the time, and I was spending the day at her house. I decided to play the game called Resident Evil, which must have been some sort of spider-killing game based on the cover art.
Yeah.
I made it to the first zombie, and the cutscene terrified me so much that I slammed the off button and ran out of the room. To this day... The Resident Evil series is one of my favorites, and I'll never forget my introduction to the series.
Yeah.
That's great.
Have you guys ever left the room because of a game?
So we had to stop playing Silent Hill 2. We played it with a group of people, and like the first like few scares of it were enough that we were like, all right, let's go do something else. Like, yeah.
There's a section of Resident Evil 2 where I didn't stop playing the game, but I kind of went back into rooms. Like, I know where I had to go. Mm-hmm. I was afraid to do it, though. there's like a hallway that just has some really heavy, menacing breathing in it.
Yeah.
Like some sort of monsters there. Nothing ever comes of it. It just scared me so much that I entered the room that I didn't want to go back in.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, physically left the room. Had to get up and go leave the That's what I mean, yeah.
I haven't gotten to that point, though.
Good.
Yeah, I don't think that I can think of. I've never done that, but I have had times where I've stopped playing.
Yeah. So like, I think that I did it like for a minute with Amnesia. Like, I actually paused it and was like, okay, time to take a break. As I do, you know, I take frequent breaks when I play games. But the time that stuck with me most, I was just like, I was at home, and you know, this is when I was living at my parents' house. Like, it was like summer break from college, or maybe it was during high school. I don't even know when it was. But for part of the year, my grandparents live in the basement. But effectively, I'm home alone. You know, at this time, and they're down in the basement. But it was like I was playing, and just there was just it's such a scary and exhausting game. And I was like, okay, I need to pause because something terrifying just happened. And I was like, I'm going to go check on grandma and grandpa. Like, I'm just going to go see how they're doing. Say, hey, because I can't be in the same room here. I didn't turn it off. I didn't like rage quit it or anything. Not rage quit, scare quit, spook quit. I didn't spook quit. But I was like, yeah, and then just I need to like get out of this room as quickly as possible. Yeah. Oh man. Let's see here, David. What's Umgamoose say?
Umgamoose, which is an awesome name, handle, whatever.
And also an awesome dude. Very nice guy.
Yeah. It says, although the first Resident Evil made me jump a couple times when I played it, hello, little doggy in the window.
Little doggy through the window.
The first game I played
the game. Let's use that dog. Oh, God, no.
My throat. Ow.
Sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
The first game I played that gave me more than just a quick jump scare would have to be System Shock 2. There is nothing quite like wandering around a derelict ship, listening to the quite creepy audio logs of people who are most likely dead, only to have a ghost appear, start reenacting their death to some terrible monster, and then when the apparition disappears, you open a door only to find the monster who you just saw in a vision.
So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's, I went back and tried System Shock 1 or 2 a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And
wow. it was probably 2, because 1 is impossible to get to run on modern computers.
Okay, yeah. Although like it has not aged well at all in terms of like a graphics or a gameplay standpoint, the survival horror storyline has still aged incredibly well, which is, I think, really, really interesting.
Yeah. I was really, like, shocked. Like, it came out on GOG, System Shock 2, and then it just, like, immediately was available on Steam for Mac. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I can own this game now. Haven't played it yet, but I own it. As you do. Yeah, System Shock. Ben, how about you? First game that ever spooked you?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and there were two that I could come up with. The first one was Duke Nukem.
Oh, wow.
The brain monsters with, like, the little fangs. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
For some reason, those really scared me as a kid. So that was one. I can't remember what my second one was. So we'll probably just go with Silent Hill. Silent Hill was, like, the first game I played where I realized that, like, you could make a game that was a horror game, and that was the purpose of it, to scare you. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was really incredible.
Yeah. But, yep. Go ahead and read the next one, Dennis.
Sure. So Chris says, that stupid Friday the 13th NES game, going way back. Just being out wandering about and then scary noise, Jump Shoot Jason is here killing you. Other than that, I remember Doom. Oh, yeah, that one was scary. Mm-hmm. I remember Doom would do that thing where you occasionally open a door and bam, a monster eating your face jumps out.
Doom is pretty scary. I mean,
yeah. So it had good jump scares.
Yeah. And also just the overwhelmingness of it, too. That and its demons. Demons is scary. Yeah, we just did Friday the 13th for Abject Suffering, and there's some good ideas in there. I mean, it is pretty stupid, but it actually is kind of like a proto survival horror thing.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So the remaining people here, David, what was the first spooky game for you?
I feel like probably if I said like very, very first, it would be Zelda 2. When you, or whatever the heck they called that game, when you died, like, all of a sudden there would be, like, this, you know, kind of this silhouetted, you know, image of Ganon with, like, this, like, loud, like, evil laughing, and that creeped me the hell out.
Return of Ganon, yes.
Yeah. I don't know why, but that really, like, creeped me out. I'm not sure of, like, games that were actually scary. Definitely Stalker was the first one I got into. There's a point where that suddenly gets very real. But I think probably the first one I ever did was Eternal Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the probably for me the first time a game ever scared excuse me, scared me would be the bathtub scene.
Yeah.
Which I, that's so weird that that's like, you know, like, one of the magazines that did like top 10 scariest things, that was like number 3.
Mm-hmm.
When that's so much just a straight jump scare.
Yeah. Like that- well, it's we talked about this on the episode of Watch Out for Fireballs about the game, which came out yesterday as you're listening to this. Just like it's scary because it is you dead by a horrible way. Like I find it scary because like, oh, this is showing me dead by suicide. Like that, like yeah. That's a kind of like real world scary thing, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, well, and it is a jump scare in the purest sense. It exists purely just to like, bleh, you know, get in your face like Large Marge. But
yeah, and it's even like in its presentation, it's basically identical to those, you know, stare at this screen and something will change.
Yeah,
you know,
Screamers.
Stupid.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like it. Almost is pretty much one to one with that. I feel like the other thing is also the insanity effects in that are very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know you look, but rather that's the one section of the game that no matter which of the paths you choose,
mm-hmm.
you will always be insane at that section.
Right.
Huh.
Any time after it, two out of the three paths will have access to the magic that lets you restore your sanity.
Right.
So that's kind of the one shot on that.
Yeah, that everybody's going to see if they're in there.
So
yeah, cool. So I'll do mine. Mario 2, first game that scared me. Fanto,
really?
the mask that chases you after you pick up a key. Just like if we're talking like first, like that freaked me out because that was the first instance of like straight up pursuit that I experienced in a game. Like the fact that it just like came loose, and then you know the fact that it's this grimacing, floating mask that just kind of chases after you throughout the entire level. So this notion of like no matter how quickly you run, where you go, it is going to get up to you.
It's funny how seemingly silly things like a poorly executed, you know, boss fight in a Star Wars game or a mask floating through the air,
mm-hmm.
like can really have an effect on you when you kind of forget that. You know, it's if you die in the game, it's going to be okay in real life. Like you lose your grip on that so easily, and then stuff really gets scary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was like really little when I played it too. Like I was in the basement of my babysitter's with like a bunch of other kids, and just sure. like, holy crap, what is this? Did I tell you guys about? Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think part of it also with that one is if I look at. Personally, some of my other ones I don't like. I think it's just natural. Like, I really don't like being chased.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably not just me being crazy. I think that's, well, not just me being crazy. I think, you know, that's a human thing that, you know, being yeah. chased and, you know, fight and flight response is kind of an inbred thing.
Mm-hmm.
Inbred? Yeah. Is that...
Did I tell you guys about what I bought at Portland Retro Games Expo?
Yeah.
So it's.
I remember this.
Yeah. So I'll reiterate it here because it is apropos. But it is a nice like wood wall hanging kind of thing, like wood pixel art. It's you know painted and glazed and lacquered. It's real nice, real high quality. It's going to stick around for a long time. Of that mask. So it's like roughly the size of a dinner plate, and I have it right now hanging over my key hook.
Okay, I was about to say you should hang it next to your key hook.
Yeah, I can post a picture of it. I meant to tweet it, but it's like right over my key hook.
I do remember that. I followed your link to his site. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so really enjoy that. Yeah, so we have a couple of other questions here. Just like go ahead.
Can I say something real quick? I remembered my second one.
Oh,
it was Shadows of the Empire, the second to last boss when you're underwater and it's a giant sea monster underwater.
Oh, that's terrifying. Yeah, that's upsetting. Like that the giant sea monster in Half-Life, the sea eel in Mario 64, the idea that you are so in this other thing's world, an element. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Banjo-Kazooie, I hated that effing shark.
Yeah, that's something like universally frightening, I think. Ugh, so scary. So spooky, you guys.
Yeah. Happy Halloween themed thing.
Yes. So yeah, we just have a couple of things here. So alongside this, Christopher Schley asked, what is one game that totally turned you into an emotional bag of shit? I was thinking about Gone Home and how I was totally all over the place with happy and sad feels. Damn you, Interactive Entertainment. I don't want to quash discussion, but let's move through this because we're getting up on 2 hours.
Yeah, Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, Walking Dead's the only game that I did miss it for.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Good.
Oh. I'd say Spec Ops or something like StarCraft that was really important to me, even if the storyline was kind of silly.
Yeah.
Huh. Every time Peppy died, I shed a tear.
Yes, I'll allow it. I will allow conflation between StarCraft and Star Fox.
Oh, totally misheard you.
No, I'm going to allow it. I said you don't have to.
Needs to happen. Peppy needs to be served.
Man, is there anything furries won't ruin? Yeah. So I am on the record. People know if they've listened to me. Like I'm an emotional guy. So I've dude missed it at plenty of games. Thinking here in recent memory, like obviously The Walking Dead, just kind of like, oh god, just totally again emotional bag of shit. Like I'm useless after I play it. Mm-hmm. But Dear Esther got to me in a real big bad way. Especially that final the final section of it, and also strangely To the Moon spoke to me very strongly. I recommend everybody play that. It's another one of those real short narrative driven experiences. It's like a visual novel crossed with 16-bit Zelda kind of thing. It's like walking around and it just kind of like plays on the same stuff that like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind does. Except they're trying to create memories instead of erase them. And yeah,
so it's like Total Recall.
A little bit, yeah, or like kind of like a weird form of Inception. But yeah, like it really fucks my shit up. I went back and replayed it recently, and like yeah, and it may have helped that I picked one weekend to play both those games in. both Gone Home or not Gone Home, but both Dear Esther and To the Moon. It was like, oh my god, yeah.
I don't want to be happy this weekend.
No. Oh man, it's amazing how it's a choice. And then finally, Daniel Anzalovic. Yeah, I'm sorry. I could have just left it at Daniel and not fucked up your name, but I like your last name.
I think you did a good job.
Yeah, Anzalovic. He asks, are any of you fans of Typing of the Dead? If so, why are you not playing Typing of the Dead Overkill right now?
It's on sale with the Halloween thing.
Yeah, it is.
Actually, I read this and I'm like, dang it. That was my news item I meant to say and couldn't remember.
I had no idea this was a thing. Like until I was on Steam, I was like, how long has this been? Oh, it's been out like just today and it's on sale. Neat.
Yeah. I've actually never played it, but the original, but it's always stuck in my mind of like a game idea I really, really like.
Yeah.
And I really, for some weird reason, care about touch typing.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'll sit back after I type something and just like marvel, like, wow.
You done good, so, Ross.
Done good. So I don't know. I really, really like this idea. I don't know, and I like the fact that they want to add a co-op mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, see, I've played it several times before, but I don't own it. I'm probably one of only like four people in the entire world who owns the Dreamcast keyboard, but not Typing of the Dead. Got to play Quake 3. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. The reason I'm not playing it right now is just because it's not on Mac. But, you know, these things happen. Womp, womp, indeed. So yeah, thank you everybody for responding and doing all those things.
Like, and hijacking.
I was happy about the hijack just because I like talking about spooky games, and I wanted to break out the Mario 2 thing because people neglect how scary that is. Yeah. Cool. So if you will want, you know, the main place that we take those responses is on Facebook. It's just facebook.com/thelevel. Should we button it up, guys?
Yeah.
Let's button it up.
Damn it, Ben, don't hold us here.
Yeah, we should do it. All right, let's do it.
So I'm going to keep it light and breezy, just so we can. But iTunes, ratings and reviews, subscribe to us. People forget to do that or neglect to do it. I'm kind of one of those. I just subscribe to most of my shit in Instacast. But if you have iTunes, you can subscribe and then just delete the episodes. And that helps us out in the numbers. It helps game the system, as it were. I'm not going to encourage you to do any more of those things. Check out other stuff on the network. Check out Hex Crank, the survival horror blog. By the time this comes out, I'll hopefully have the first article up, or at the very least, a solidified list of stuff to approach. Is there anything I'm missing besides like the tip jar, blah, blah, blah?
Oh, we have a Steam group.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes. It is, I don't know. Just search on Steam for the Level Podcast and it'll show up. Like, URLs in Steam are weird. I really don't like Steam's user interface that much. Mm-hmm. But okay, so now that I said that, I'm just going to look it up. Yes, it is steamcommunity.com/groups/thelevelpodcast.
Yep.
So cool. I am Cole Ross. That's at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm David Meismith at Meismith777.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Cool. You're probably due for your tweet, Ben, aren't you?
Oh, somebody hasn't been Merkel following day. My Twitter.
I don't really read Twitter that much. So.
There you go.
Can I read it?
Yeah, sure. Like this is my first mean tweet, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty mean. And you also at replied them, so they would have seen it.
Yeah.
Wait. What'd you say?
Okay. Do you mind if I read it for you?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Fall stops are pretty awesome, unless you're listening to Mumford and Sons. Then, then fall stops are pretty awesome. Then stops are pretty awesome. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Oh man, Mumford and Son comes up so often on the iTunes radio at work. And it's like, I like that one song. It's pretty good. The little lion man. But I'm not like everything else. Kind of sounds the same.
Do you like it 5,000 times?
I'll kick you in the head 9 times. yeah, but no, that's pretty good. Yeah, so you're good until April. Oh man. So yeah, do all those things and also continue listening because I really appreciate it. And you know what? Thanks to you guys for doing the show. I really have fun.
Thanks for leading it.
Yeah. Cool. So have a good night, everybody. I don't care what time it is. Have a good night, whatever the next night is.
Have a spooky night.
Ooh. You know what? There's no reason it can't be spooky all year round.
In the spirit of Halloween, the grind is going to be a literal grind this week. Yeah,
yes, this is going to be 40 minutes of me like with a mortar and pestle trying to turn nerds into nerd dust.